Worship of spirit by spirit. Worship God, feeling that God is spirit and I am spirit, writes Swami Ashokananda. Because that would be the truth about me and the truth about God. Thus, if I worship him in this way, I shall be worshiping him in spirit and in truth, as the Bible says. In my worship, there will be no element of falsehood or unreality. If, on the other hand, I do not recognize him as spirit, if I do not recognize myself as spirit, and if I do not come to the conviction that in this I have arrived at truth, then my worship of him is not the truest worship. Just as worshiping God in an idol or thinking of him as only an object of your formal worship would not be to worship him in truth, in the same way, to worship him without thinking of yourself as spirit would not be to worship him in spirit and in truth. End of quote. Another quote. When a little quietness comes into this mind, you feel as if you are a soul, not spirit yet, but as if you are something a little different from the mind and the body. You will actually have that feeling. If you say, well, some people may have that feeling, I tell you, everybody will have it. Granted, there has been a little change in the condition of the mind, that consciousness will come. And when you look at others, you will begin to feel that they too are a little more than mere body and mind. You will see something else there. You do not have to infer it, you actually see it. When you look at the world, you will feel that behind this material world is a finer entity, and God will not seem so unreal or impossible as he seemed before. End of quote. No rest here. Quoting the Swami again, I would not call any position philosophy if it fails to recognize that it is my present state of being and knowing that is the source of all my trouble. In my present state, I am not able to make peace with myself. I am continually torn and divided within myself. The claims of the body encroach upon the claim of the spirit, and the claims of the mind want to ignore the claims of the body as well as those of the spirit. And of course, the spirit will ignore the claims of both body and mind. Until we have really established ourselves on our highest level, which is that of the spirit, there is a continuous loss of equilibrium. We are continually moving and never able to attain any stability of being. We all know this to be true. That is the real problem of any individual seeker of truth. The Swami says, in one of the books of our philosophy, it is said, do not think that you are separate from anything. Whatever you think you are separate from will circumscribe you and bind you. Think that you are one with all, and you will feel free. That is the true sense of oneness, but do not for a moment think it can be derived by any superficial practice. Real things are not on the surface. Only the great can achieve the great. Only the deep can achieve the deep. If you say, it seems to me the cure is more difficult than the illness, I shall ask you why you think you have not the deep power within you. Why should you have that idea? Why should you be superficial and think that that is your nature? That is where you are committing suicide. You are deep, profound, Try to be deep and profound and see if you cannot find deep and profound truth within yourself. You have to practice these things. If you become superficial, you will become like the dust that is being scattered by the wind. End of quote. And now I want to give you some brief quotations, wonderful sentences, left to us by Swami Vivekananda in his works. First one is, first kill yourself and then take the whole world as yourself. Nothing in the universe has power over you until you allow it to exercise such a power. This world is a play, and you are his playmates. If you think you are free, free you are at this moment. And if you think you are bound, bound you will be. That is the highest person who can say with truth, I know all about myself. When you look at the unchanging existence from the outside, you call it God. And when you look at it from the inside, you call it yourself. I may be a little bubble of water, and you may be a mountain high wave. Never mind. The infinite ocean is the background. Whether you know it or not, through all hands you work, through all feet you move. Classical texts of Vedanta. Let us see how the question of identity is handled in some of the celebrated classic texts of Vedanta. In The Discrimination Between the Seer and the Seen, a very popular book, we read, the form is perceived and the eye is its perceiver. The eye is perceived and the mind is its perceiver. The mind with its modifications is perceived, and the witness, the self, is verily the perceiver. But it, the witness, is not perceived by any other. And from the book Self-Knowledge, by negating all the superimpositions through the help of the scriptural statement, not this is not that, realize the oneness of the individual soul and the supreme soul by means of the great Vedic aphorisms. I am free from changes such as birth, loss of weight, senility, and death. For I am other than the body. I am unattached to the objects of the senses, such as sound and taste, for I am without sense organs. I am free from sorrow, attachment, malice, and fear, for I am other than the mind. I am without attributes and action, eternal and pure, free from stain or desire, changeless and formless, and always free. I fill all things inside and out like space, changeless and the same in all. I am pure, unattached, stainless and immutable. I am verily that supreme Brahman which is eternal, stainless and free, which is one, indivisible and non-dual, and which is of the nature of bliss, truth, knowledge, and infinity. Blessed am I. I have attained the consummation of my life and am free from the clutches of transmigration. I am the essence of eternal bliss. I am infinite. In me, the ocean of infinite bliss, The waves of the universe are created and destroyed by the playing of the wind of Maya. We should also mention the Ashtavakra Sanhita, a highly monistic text that concludes with a celebratory section on realization, and the Panchadashi that does a comprehensive job of pricking all sorts of bubbles, the illusions we ignorantly cherish. The Bhagavad Gita. Here we are on ground that is not only classical but also popular. Here are some of the most important verses of the Gita relating to our personal identity. This soul is never born, it never dies. Once coming to be, it never ceases to be. This birthless, deathless, changeless, and primordial spirit is not slain when the body is slain. The wise one integrated in yoga thinks, I do not do anything at all while seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, sleeping, walking, breathing, talking, giving and taking, even in opening and closing of the eyes. He knows full well that only the senses are playing on the sense objects, not the real self. He sees himself in all beings, and all beings in himself. This is the vision of the yogi whose mind is in universal harmony. He sees the same spark of God in everything he sees. End of quote. As regards our short-term identity too, the Gita has its message. It is better for a man to do a work prompted by his inner nature, even if it is not done well, than to do a work not natural to him, however well performed. He who works according to his own nature makes the right choice. End of quote. Finally, Sri Krishna tells us who all of us are in relation to him, the Lord, when he says to Arjuna, you are dear to me, for Arjuna is Mr. Everyman. Upanishads. Passages in the Upanishads, the most ancient record of all self-knowledge, about one's identity, are legion. We shall cite only a few. Quote, this knowing self is not born, nor does it die. It does not spring from anything, nor does it give birth to anything. Unborn, eternal, everlasting, and ancient. It is not destroyed when the body is destroyed. Again, he is the one, the ruler of all, the inner self of every being who makes his oneness manifold. The wise who realize him as the soul of their soul, to them belongs eternal bliss and to none else. He is the one reality in this world of shadows, the one consciousness of all conscious beings, he who, though one, fulfills the desires of the many. That which all of this has as its subtle essence, of that is everything made. That is the real, that is the self, and thou art that. Next, the instruction with regard to the self. The self is below, the self is above, the self is behind, in front, to the right, to the left. The self has become all of this. And he who dwells in all beings, who is within all beings, whom the beings do not know, whose body all beings are, who controls the beings from within. He is that inner controller, your immortal self. Summary. To conclude this study of the identity crisis, we cannot do better than to provide our readers with the experience of Swami Ashokananda in his own account. Quote, "These are the conclusions that I arrived at, that there is only one reality, the Spirit, and that I am that reality. And if I am that reality, then I am not bound by this body or these senses, nor even by my mind. So I have to admit that I am infinite, I am limitless. How can there be anything outside me? If you say, 'Now, Swami, that's no way to think. It sounds so awfully egotistical. How can you think that you are all that there is and that we are nothing? Are you really so majestic, so great, that you can say you are the whole of reality?' Yes, I can say that, but it is not egotism. Egotism is itself a phase of the mind. You have read in Vedanta that the ego is one of the four aspects of the mind. You can realize a state when you actually see that the ego has nothing to do with you. In that state, you can't be egotistic. Egotism thrives on the recognition of other people with whom you can compare yourself and find yourself superior. Without that, you cannot have any egotism. If you are the all, how can you make comparisons? In fact, you cannot even say I, because when there is only one reality, it becomes a silent entity. It cannot define itself, it cannot name itself, for all naming and defining belong to the mind. And if you are not the mind, if you are beyond it, if you are the ineffable reality in which there is no definition, and in which there are no terms, then what you are cannot be expressed in any way." End of quote. It was Sunday afternoon. The retreat had come to an end, and we had to come down from the mountain, as almost everyone has eventually to do. But it is to be hoped that something of these heights of thought and feeling remained with all of us for the days and years that followed.